Hey friends, welcome back to the Work Your Wealth podcast, the show where we're teaching you how to make smarter choices with your money. I'm your host, Mary Beth Storjahan, certified financial planner and founder of Workable Wealth. Today on the show, I am thrilled to have Natalie Ekdahl as a guest. Natalie is a business strategist and high-performance coach who helps high-achieving women entrepreneurs across industries and time zones build, grow, and scale their businesses while avoiding overwhelm. She's the founder of the Biz Chicks community and podcast and has been recognized as one of the top women in business to listen to. She's also been featured in Inc., Fast Company, Huffington Post, and Entrepreneur. Natalie brings a multidisciplinary perspective to her work and draws from her MBA education, 20-plus years of work experience, deep intuition, and over 200 podcast interviews with industry influencers to help her clients with customized strategy and coaching to reach six figures plus in profits. Natalie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mary Beth. I'm so thrilled to be here.
I'm so excited to have you here. So to kick it off, you have an MBA. You have over 20 years of work experience. You've interviewed a ton of people, over 200 people on your podcast. Is that right?
Yeah. And I have 275 episodes at this point, and some are solo, some are on-air coaching calls. But the bulk of, you know, the first 2 years was interviewing primarily women entrepreneurs.
The big thing that I loved from your bio is that you help clients to reach the six-figure mark in profits in their business. I love that you called out profits. So many people don't talk about profits, and that is a huge word to emphasize.
It really is, because we see, you know, you and I are both online entrepreneurs, so we're in this online space and we're, you know, in the Facebook feed and we're getting, you know, we're on people's email newsletters and email lists, and we hear about these big launches people brag about. You know, I had this six-figure launch or this seven-figure launch or this five-figure day. And that means revenue. That does not mean that's what went into their pocket.
Yes.
So I think there's a big disparity and lack of authentic, not that they're not authentic, but a lack of telling the whole story. And I think in our minds, as people reading that and listening to that, we assume, I think there's like our mind doesn't do all the calculations. Mm-hmm. And so we just see those numbers and we think that's what's in their personal bank account. But if you listen to a lot of podcasts like I do, if you follow people over time, and there are many people that do share the back end of their business, you start to see, oh, well, that person who had a seven-figure launch, they spent $50,000 to build their email list. Oh, okay. Right. Well, that sure eats into the profit. They have a team of five and they spent, you know, this X number of dollars on Facebook ads. And so when you start to hear, you know, more details about people's businesses, it's really about the profit. And the reason I'm so passionate about it is because I want people to have money for their family to save and spend. I'm less concerned about the top line revenue number and more concerned about what's left over at the end of the day. Because I've seen a lot of women come to me with these amazing businesses, but they're actually not profitable.
So how do you get them to refocus there, as opposed to, because obviously what has to happen is cutting out all the noise, right? Because we do have those numbers thrown at us on a daily basis of look at my launch and look at this thing and look how much I earn. How do you get women to refocus on, we actually need to pay attention to your bottom line, the net?
Yes. So in many cases, those clients that are not having, that don't have a profitable business, it's because they are not the breadwinner of their family. I find that the women that are the breadwinner of their family, they actually know that they need to have X amount left over at the end of the day to transfer to their family bank account to pay the mortgage, to buy groceries, to pay for their children's activities. So I find that those women are more conscious of it. It's a little trickier if you have a spouse that has a fantastic job that technically could completely support the family, then it becomes less of a priority to move that money out of the business. And when we keep that money in the business, it gets spent on things that aren't necessarily important or needed. So I love helping women to kind of think about their goal. Like, what's a goal that you want to transfer every month from your business to your family? And what is your inspiration behind that goal? So for the women in my you know, client base that are breadwinners, it's to pay the bills. For for other women, I help them create, you know, a goal that could include saving for their children's college or funding the college account. Like, what is this amount we need to fund? It could be funding a large savings account for their family in case of emergency. And it also could be like an amazing trip they want to go on. So helping them to refocus on what do you want this money to do for you and your family and working towards a goal seems to be very effective and helps us. The main thing I love to help people with, which I think you do too, is moving the money out of the PayPal account. Like, yes. I'll talk to him. Yes. Like, I have, you know, $20,000 in my PayPal account. Okay, well, let's move that out of there and put it into a bank account that is actually FDIC insured and just not this pool of money. You know, it's like having, you know, $1,000 of cash in your wallet. You're going to spend that a little differently than and make different buying choices than if you had, say, $100 in your wallet.
So true. And I love that you're talking about bringing it back to the personal side of things. And I think that's where a lot of people do struggle with their finances in general. And then especially in business, when we have the money coming in, it's coming in or and it's going back out. And we haven't actually taken the time to set those clear-cut goals. And I talk about this all the time. I know I talk about it a ton, but we do. We need to have clear-cut goals that are personal to our lives. And so that, again, is where I'm sure you see it is like shut out the noise. What's important to you in your life right now? Is it funding, you know, the extracurricular activities for your kids? Is it the taking the vacation? Is it getting your retirement set up and maxing that out? Whatever those things are, I agree that it's much more incentive to actually make those changes and change your focus when you have those things and you're able to measure progress for yourself.
Yes. And I also find that women who are in that wonderful situation where their business isn't needed, their income isn't needed to like fund, you know, the day-to-day family expenses, they actually, if they are not transferring money from their business to their family, it creates conflict and stress in the marriage or in the partnership because, you know, your partner is seeing you spend all this time and energy away from the family, you know, away from other things you could be doing. And it doesn't seem to be having a financial benefit coming back. So I think it's really important that even if money isn't needed from your business to fund the family, it actually also takes a lot of pressure off that partner too. It's a lot of pressure to be the breadwinner and to be the sole provider for a family. And so there's so many benefits, you know, that, you know, aren't necessarily like the numbers or the financial. There's all these like intangible and emotional benefits that come from doing that. And personally, I just feel like a boss when I'm like transferring money to my family. I am making things happen. And I think that my clients, I've watched them do that too. Like they really feel like they're making some stuff happen and it helps their internal spirit. It helps their confidence and just their overall attitude, which again, helps their business grow and thrive.
So what are the traits and qualities that you've seen of some of these successful women who are earning six figures plus when they come to you, where are they at? And then what's changed or what's different once they've hit the six figure plus mark? What kind of characteristics do they embody?
I actually did a study of them because I was looking at, you know, my clients as a whole and what were the things that made those kind of high performers stand out? And I actually did a podcast episode on this called The Secrets of My Six Figure Clients, which is really fun to do. And these are kind of some of the things that I found in pulling that content and episode together. The main thing that they do, which anyone can do at any level of business, is they set a goal every week and they hit that goal every week. They can't imagine setting a goal and not hitting it. And they actually don't understand why other people set goals and don't hit them. It's kind of funny when you hear, like when you talk deeper to them. So I host paid masterminds and I would have women previously at all different levels of business together. They were just all monetizing in their business. And I was noticing there'd be like two or so rock stars in a mastermind that literally every week I asked them, have you hit your goal? Oh yeah. And yes. And yes. And yes. And then other women that were more struggling in their business or having a lot of inconsistencies in their business, they were not hitting their goals consistently. So I really saw that across the board, that was something that made them stand out. And it doesn't have to be a huge goal. It's just that they're really focused and they're not chasing squirrels and they're not getting distracted. They're not online and see a virtual summit and then decide to stop what they were doing and go watch it. They are focused on the goal that they set for themselves. So that was probably like the biggest aha from examining them.
Goes back to the goal setting.
I'm happy to share more if you want to hear more.
Yeah. Do you have another one or two we can talk
about? I do. Another one that was really kind of interesting was that the majority of the women that I was working with and that were at this level, they had a local element to their business. So again, you and I have, you know, this kind of online business and online focus, but many of them were finding huge success growing a local service-based business. And it was very profitable. And then they're shifting kind of, they've come to me and found me because they're wanting to add an online element or take online strategies and use them in their local market. So that was pretty fascinating as well. And then kind of like the final, like big aha is they're thick skinned. So they, not that they're robots and don't have emotions, they of course do, but they don't let outside external opinions and factors impact them as much. Like if someone doesn't like exactly what they're doing, but they feel, you know, they feel really passionate about it and they are seeing success in it, they're going to move forward with it. And they're not needing as many opinions from other people to help them move forward. And it's not that they don't have doubts and don't have mindset issues that they work through. They do. But especially, you know, in terms of selling, like we all, that's a word that many women don't like. Interchange it with the word share.
Yeah, it's a dirty word.
It's a dirty selling word, a dirty right? Word. Somehow along the way, we all have some experience with a person selling something that didn't feel great to us, but we have to share about what we do or no one's going to know what we do. And so what I find is these women, they're comfortable. They get comfortable over time with selling what they're doing and finding ways to be bold in sharing about their business. And, you know, many of us were brought up, I was, not to tell others how great I am. But sometimes you have, when I learned that that wasn't the best advice when I had my first job interview and they're like, why are you so great? Why should we hire you? And so I learned early on, especially a lot of my early career was working with men. And I kind of grew up in business watching how men behave. And they brag about what they do all the time and their accomplishments. Mm-hmm. And it's not seen as a negative thing. So I would love for us to shift as women to like, just be like, yeah, brag about it. I now host masterminds for women at the six figure and beyond level. And in one group, the ladies love it. They are bragging about their latest contract and their biggest win, and they're sharing dollars with each other. And it's very unusual for women to talk about, you know, how much they're making and, you know, what this new client is bringing in. And so it's really fun that they have that space to do it. So yeah, those are kind of, I would say like the top three.
I think it's so important to have that space to talk about numbers. And I have one friend in particular who I agree, I will share numbers with her and I'll celebrate wins. And I also, in the study group, a mastermind that I'm a part of with other financial planners, we talk numbers as well, because I think it's so easy to shy away from them. And it's also so easy to get into that mindset again of just talk what you spoke about in the beginning. Those, I think you've called them before, vanity metrics, you know, mm-hmm. again, the here's what I'm bringing in, or I have all of these clients, I'm doing all of these things. And then without being real though, it's say, okay, well actually here's what I'm taking home. And you know, it allows me to maybe max out my 401k or blah, blah, blah. But you know, it's not like I'm buying, you know, fancy cars. Or I think it just brings it back. So you're able to celebrate. I feel like you're able to truly celebrate too when it's a safe space to share those numbers, because you're super excited. But then I'm sure maybe you see it too. I'm super excited about my wins sometimes, but sometimes I realize like, oh, it's too surfacey though if you put it out there in public. Whereas there's some people you can get real with of like, hey, this is so exciting. This happened and here's what I actually net on the thing or can actually do with the money.
It is.
And I think it's so much more, it boosts your own self-esteem and your own confidence when you can have those open and honest conversations.
For me, someone that kind of opened my eyes to what was going on online and even what my own brain was doing, that I was seeing these top line numbers and not necessarily calculating out how much was left over at the end of the day, was Claire Pelletreau. She had a podcast called the Get Paid Podcast, and she actually brought on guests and got them to open up their books on air. And it was really interesting to me because I had interviewed several of the same women that she later interviewed. And I don't ask people their numbers on air. And although maybe I will, maybe I will start, because Claire's
surprise,
surprise. I'll do the Get Paid series. Cause that was just fascinating, because there were women who I had interviewed. So I'd spent, you know, basically an hour talking to them and learning about their business. And I'm pretty intuitive, but there were several of her guests that either I had personally interviewed or I'd been following online. And when they shared at the end of the day how much they had left over, I was shocked. You know, it seemed like they had a multi-six-figure business, but at the end of the day, they actually only had, you know, say $20,000 or $30,000 at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, they could have worked at Starbucks and made more.
Yeah.
So, and sometimes we have years like that intentionally, where we are in a building year and our family has decided to, you know, not to invest in the business and invest in the growth. And that's fine if that's intentional. But I think that many women are not thinking through what they're spending on and making some big spending mistakes that really in the end is like stealing money from your family.
I agree. And that's the interesting part too. And we do it as entrepreneurs, and we do it when, you know, you have a regular 9-to-5 job as well, because we only see and hear the surface level stuff. We just don't know. And so our perception and what people put out there for us to perceive about them is not necessarily always true.
Yes.
And that's the important part of why it's, you know, not to speak bad of anybody. We all do it. That's what social media is there for. We all market to each other, but it's so much more important to be in tune with what's important to you because of that, because it's so easy to be swayed, just like you could be swayed by advertisements and billboards and all of those other things. We actually now sway each other though, which is the interesting thing that I speak to is like, magazines and billboards. We market to each other all the time. And it's with the Instagram filters and all of the things.
Yes.
So what are some of the struggles you see women facing? You know, obviously, so not necessarily knowing where their cash flow was going, not having the goals. Is there anything else specifically? I think I've heard you speak about before whether or not they should go into debt when they launch their business.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of people going into debt to launch anything. If you do, I would want it to be very strategic and have, you know, a clear plan on how that's going to be paid back. But I think that there's kind of, especially, you know, online, this kind of bubble of it seems like everybody else is successful. And like, if you put out, you know, maybe you hear someone invested, you know, 10,000, 15,000 or 50,000 in building an email list, which then they created products and sold to and had this big profitable business. It worries me for people to do that because there's no guarantee. And what I'm observing right now in the businesses I'm getting to see, and I've actually worked one-on-one with 150 women in a one-time paid strategy session in the last 18 months. So I've like kind of seen the back behind the scenes of 150 businesses. And what I'm seeing is that we're not able to replicate some of the success of people that have come before us because things have shifted, things have gotten more crowded, algorithms have changed. And so I am a big fan of people starting out by working one-on-one with clients or working in small groups where you're actually getting paid immediately and you're not creating content or a course in the hopes of getting paid later.
Yes.
And I agree. Really learn what people are needing. And you actually, it's such a low overhead way to start. And I had one client, she tapped into her, you know, personal network, and she actually offered 10 free 30-minute calls. And that was a strategy that we came up with for her to kind of see what people were needing and see if she could get further work with them. And she did. And like within 3 calls, I will say she's good at selling and that word does not bother her. Within 3 calls, she had gained 2 new clients and like immediately $5,000 in revenue.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it's really incredible that, you know, and when she came to me, she was wanting to create a course, a social media course. And so I suggested, why don't you work one-on-one with people and then you'll know the program to create. And that's helping her. So this summer she's spending working one-on-one with clients, getting paid immediately for that, which she needed to take care of her family. She needed money to immediately come into her life. And now she's seeing what's in common and some common struggles. And as she's working with them, she's creating content that she can, you know, create a digital product from and serve more people with. But yeah, I'm not a big fan of going into debt because I don't think you need to start most businesses.
I agree. If you can do it without going into debt, that's the way to go. And I know it pushes the timeline back further for some people. And I think the big thing is a lot of people don't necessarily have a startup budget for their business. That's where I think a lot of people struggle is if you have that clarity on the front end of what do you need to get your business going, and then you'll have that target goal again of what do you need to have saved. It makes it a lot easier if you're trying to do the website and the business cards or whatever else. You should be able to launch with pretty low overhead. But again, going into debt, I mean, you're just putting the pressure on yourself right away, right? To try and like get the profits.
It does. And it creates the other thing it does, which I don't know if you've talked about it. It actually creates a level of desperation in your inside of you because you have this pressure and you feel this need to make things happen very quickly. And the world can sense that from you. the people you're trying to work with or your customers you're pitching to, they're going to sense that you are a little desperate. And so when you are not in that situation, when you're completely confident in what you're doing and you can take or leave that client, it'd be nice to have them. But if not, there's other ones, you know, down the road, it changes how you're perceived in the marketplace.
I agree. I think it helps you to build something sustainable as well, mm-hmm. as opposed to bouncing all over the place. I completely agree on the desperation. I've seen it time and time again, too. If you start already in debt, if you start without that savings cushion in place, you're putting the pressure on from day one and you're not able to build something thoughtfully and carefully. You're basically just jumping in head first and just kind of taking whatever's going to come your way. I see most people who do this, who do have the debt or don't have the savings, they underprice their services a lot because they're just trying to get the sale and then they end up resenting their business. So there's a lot of downfall that can happen when you do go into the debt without, go into the business with debt. But that's not to say if you go into business with debt and you have a plan in place and a strict pricing structure and all of that to get out of it, that's at least more beneficial than going in without a plan. But I would opt for no debt as well. I would say if you're going to take out debt, have a plan in place, what your pricing needs to be, how many clients you need to get, what products you need to sell in order to get out of it, and what your timeline is for that to happen as well.
Yes.
That's what I see a lot is if they take on the debt, there's not a plan in place for getting out of it. Mm-hmm. So there just needs to be, obviously things change, as I'm sure you see, but yes. I think there needs to be some sort of framework in place.
I agree completely.
So what other struggles do you see women facing when they're in business?
I think that it's like the comparison is really hard. I watch women kind of going back to what's on Instagram, what's the latest thing out there. You know, the grass is always greener in someone else's business than it is in ours.
True.
And even talking to women in the same peer group sometime, you know, they'll perceive that one person is so much farther ahead of them than they are. And I like to say, keep your eyes on your own paper. You know, at some point, it's even a good idea if you are feeling, if it's impacting your emotions to see what's online or to receive people's emails, if it makes you feel not so good about yourself and it impacts your personal confidence, then I say unsubscribe. I'll even tell my audience, like, if I'm doing anything that is causing you to feel less than unsubscribe. Do not listen to me. Do not read my stuff. Leave my Facebook community. Like I do, because I really want what's best for people out there. And if I'm triggering that in someone, then that's not what I'm attempting to do. And we need to kind of like, sometimes there's seasons where we may need to like put the blinders on and just do the work, just get the clients, just work with the clients and not watch all this noise going on and not see all these things we could be doing. Staying focused and doing things to protect your own mind and your mindset will help you so much in business. Because what I have observed from being in the online space since like 2010 and in different businesses and watching this space and podcasting since 2014 is that people come and go. And that there are people that have, you know, kind of had this moment of success, that five-figure launch, that six-figure launch, and it's not sustainable. And they actually go out of business. I've interviewed several women that are no longer in business. But I've also watched people that stayed with it and stayed the course. And actually, most of the people in my mind right now, they grew slowly over time. And there's something about staying consistent, which is kind of what you're saying, staying consistent in what you're doing. You want to continue to see growth happening. Like if you're not seeing growth in what you're doing, whether it's podcasting, whether it's your business, if you're not seeing some incremental growth, then I would take a look at if this is worth still doing. But if you're seeing growth over time, stay with it. It may not be the stratospheric growth, but majority of those people are not maintaining that over time.
That's great advice. And it's true. Do you think women in general need to have a network of other women who are on the same level of them in order to keep pushing themselves forward?
Absolutely. My personal network has evolved, and even, you know, who my confidants are has evolved over time. And I think it will continue to. And when you are with people that are at a similar level of you, and I like to call it like a similar growth trajectory or level of momentum in their business. So say I was in a mastermind with a group of women, or I have an accountability partner, and the other person or people are, say, working part-time or over, during nap time only, say they have little kids and they're working during nap time, I right now am working full-time in my business. So what I'm able to accomplish and do in my business is so much different. The momentum I can create and the things I can accomplish is not going to compare to someone that can only work 1 or 2 hours a day. It's just completely different. That I, and I've been there. I've been there where I've only been working 1 or 2 hours a day on my business. And so I literally can feel the difference in the amount of progress I've made in my business. So I've had my little guy. So I have three kids. I have a daughter that's 15 and a son that's 5 and a son that's 3. But it really wasn't until last fall that my boys went into full-time childcare. And that what has happened in my business has been insane. What I've been able to get done has been incredible. And even, you know, the number, I was able to attend more events. I've been able to spend more time. I've been able to work with more clients. So my income, my revenue from last summer to this summer has more than doubled.
Wow.
Yeah. It's been amazing. I really like the numbers. I liked the numbers last summer, but I really like them now. So just kind of noticing who you are surrounding yourself with and also their level of positivity. We want to be around people that are positive and have kind of a growth mindset and are seeing positive things in the future for themselves and for others. If you're around someone that's negative, that the world's against them, that's really not who you want speaking into your life and your business.
I agree. I think having a network, and I think it's okay that your network evolves too. I like that you mentioned that. I think people will come in and out of your life and they're there for a purpose. Sometimes they're there for the long term, but I think you have to recognize people and opportunities that are benefiting you and those that are maybe have served their time or served their purpose. And that's kind of how I've been in some great, wonderful masterminds, but sometimes they've served a purpose and I've moved on. We've gone in different directions.
Exactly.
And that's okay. We've gone to different levels and we've done things differently and they worked while they did and there's no hard feelings and I still keep in contact. And I think that's probably one of the best things you can do is don't be afraid to walk away from something that's no longer working for you.
Yes. And I love that quote by Jim Rohn. You're the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with. Mm-hmm. And I'm not counting our children because we probably that's who we spend the most time with. Aside from our children, like who, and it could even be a podcaster. A podcaster could be one of the people you're spending the most time with because that's whose content you are consuming. So just being aware of where we're taking in content, whose advice we are taking into our life. And like you said, allowing that to shift as you change, as you evolve, as your business evolves. And that's okay. It's okay to, especially with masterminds, like it's okay to have a mastermind that lasts for 3 months or 6 months or after a year, like, well, you know, we have really gotten all we needed to get from each other. Like this is kind of where we've done what we came to do. And then to move on and bring some other, you know, people into your life. I think it's great. And I've had periods where I'm in between, like a business bestie or in between a mastermind group of my own, a personal mastermind. And there may be like a month or so where it's kind of lonely. But I'm creating space for that in my life. I'm creating space for the next level of connection to come in. And then it just happens. So sometimes it's, you know, a few weeks wait, sometimes it's months and months. But I think it's okay to also have those seasons where you're waiting for the right people to come into your life. And they will come.
I agree. I think that's totally true. It's so hard to accept other opportunities when you're being cluttered by the things that are not necessarily helping you out.
Yes.
Okay. So here's the part where we're going to transition to the wrap-up questions.
Okay. Let's do it.
So what is the best financial advice you've ever received?
This is a good question. So I read Susie Orman's book. Have you ever talked about Susie Orman?
I have not talked about her on air, no.
Okay, so she was, I guess, in the 90s, because that's when I read her book. So when I was in my 20s, I'm 45. Oh, I'm not 45 yet. I have like 3 or 4 more weeks to go. I'm 44. I'm not going to add time. So I'm 44 now. So when I was in my, probably 20 plus years ago, I read, I guess I was like my late 20s, probably like 28, 29. I read Susie Orman's book and she's a financial advisor and has been on TV. She actually still has a TV show. She may even have a podcast. But she had a book targeted at women and women being responsible with their money and really understanding their money. And especially in the generation ahead of us. So I'm Gen X. I think you're millennial or right on the edge, right, Mary Beth?
Yeah, right on the cusp.
Yeah. And then, you know, my parents are baby boomers. So especially in the generation ahead of me, it was very common for women to not know anything about their money, for the husband, the man, to run the finances. And, you know, that often the women didn't even know like what was in their bank account, what was in their savings account, what retirement funds they had, how much they owed on their house. That was very common in the generation ahead of me and the generation before that. So she really was advising that you respect your money and that you know your money. And so two things she said that really stuck with me. One was to have my own credit. And I was married to my ex-husband at the time, thinking he would be my forever husband. And at the time, I was not doing that. I didn't have my own credit card with just my name on it. None of our utility bills were just in my name. And so even though at the time I thought I'm going to be in this relationship forever, I still understood that it was responsible for me to create my own credit, you know, line of credit and own credit relationship in the world. And so I did get my own credit card at the time, and I changed one of our utility bills to be in my name. So I'm building credit for myself. And that turned out to be very smart, because I am no longer married to him. I'm married to my husband, Mark, and I have my own credit, and I continue to maintain that. I continue to maintain some things that are just in my name. And I think it's really important. The other thing that was interesting that she shared is that you should respect your money, like your cash. And you can do that by keeping it organized in your wallet. So not just throwing money around or crumpling it up and throwing it in a bag, but to literally organize your bills. So in your dollar bills. So in your wallet, to have like from lowest to highest, your ones all together, your fives all together, your 20s. And we're awesome, you know, successful women. So all of our hundreds, you know, all together. Yes. In our wallet. Although most of us are living on a cashless system now, it was less common, you know, 20 years ago. But just be respectful of the money, like that you're personally handling, and that impacts you. So sorry, it's a very long answer. I will be faster on the next ones.
No, that's good. Take care of yourself. Put yourself first. Make sure that you're building credit and respect your money. I love it. That's great advice. Thank you, Susie. Okay. And what is the worst money advice you've ever received or heard?
So it's not necessarily the worst advice. It was more lack of advice. My parents are amazing. If you met my mom, you would like her better than me. She's like the sweetest, kindest person. And my parents have like a loving, passionate marriage to this day. But in terms of money, the only money lessons I learned growing up was that savings is good and credit cards are bad. And really no tips on how to budget, how to create a budget, how to live financially in the world once I left home. So all of that I really needed to learn on my own. And I'm trying to change that in the next generation with my daughter. So she is going into her sophomore year, and I'm starting to teach her how to manage money. And we're working on figuring out a budget for her, a monthly budget. And I'm going to give her that money, and then she's responsible for spending it. And when she runs out, she runs out. So when she wants to go to the movies at the end of the month and she doesn't have any money left, she's going to have no money left. She's not going to be able to go. Oh,
that is so cool that you do that. I think that's huge. Mm-hmm. That right there, nobody ever did that with me. And most people don't do that. But I think teaching her to be empowered around her own money.
Yeah. And it's really amazing. So we are blessed that we're able to buy her whatever she wants. But when I give her a budget for something, she is such a bargain shopper. But when there's no budget, she's actually, she can do it and she can manage her money. But when it's us just paying for things, you know, she has no concept of where that money comes from and that it might run out. And especially with all of us using credit cards, you know, the kids, they just think that you go to the ATM, the building, and it gives you money, or you just swipe it. Yeah. Like, just use the card.
Oh, I wish.
You know, mama, can you get on Amazon and get me that toy? Just push the button and it will come to my door. I mean, it's really going to be interesting for our younger kids, especially like for your little ones and then my younger ones. The world, even since I've had my daughter who's 15 now, it's completely different. We're basically in a cashless system. And for our kids to understand where money comes from, it's going to be interesting. We're going to really need you continuing this conversation.
Oh yeah. I've just got a bunch of like felt money from Target, from the dollar section at Target, for my daughter, and she's running around with her ones and her tens and her 50s and hundreds, and I'm like, I don't even know if you'll actually it's going to be cashless. It's credit cards, and we give her all of our old hotel room keys, and she calls those her credit cards in her purse, and she's like, oh, I got my credit cards, where are my credit cards? Mm-hmm. And I'm just, but the concepts behind it, that will be it'll be interesting to see how this generation goes. What is your favorite money mistake you made?
I have a lot of them. Let me see if what's the favorite. What do you mean by favorite? The worst favorite.
The one that you typically like turned into a lesson, or, you know, you remembered and you didn't make the same one again.
I think it goes around communication around money with my spouse. So when I married my ex-husband, we were very young. We were fresh out of college and moved to the East Coast from California. And we went out and bought, you know, brand new furniture for our apartment. And I remember opening the mail like the next month, and even like a couple months later, it was actually a couple months later, I was going through like our bills. He had been paying them all. So I hadn't read Susie's book yet. And so he had been paying the bills and kind of taking care of the finances. And I opened one of our credit card statements and I could see we had a balance that had been carried over of a few thousand dollars. And I was like, what's happening here? Like, why do we have credit card debt? Because I was raised credit card is debt is bad, which I still prefer not to have credit card debt, but it felt like scary to me. And I said, you know, why didn't we pay this off? And he's like, we don't have the money to pay it off. And that, like, it was like, hit me. Like, here I am, this, you know, professional woman, and I'm not communicating with my husband about the money, and we would have made different choices. Or I personally would have made different choices in our, when we purchased stuff and how much we purchased, if I had known that was the state of our finances. So it really was kind of beginning me on that journey of being aware of the family finances as a whole and being responsible and communicating. So for us to check in with, I didn't have some of the tools I have now in terms of like having meetings about money and things like that. But at the time, just have a conversation about, could we afford to buy this right now? Or is this something we can't afford?
Yeah. Having those conversations is really helpful to eliminating stress in your marriage. And then what does being wealthy mean to you?
Well, I really like nice things and I always have, and I'm not ashamed of that. So being wealthy to me means being able to buy the things I want to buy, being able to travel to the places I want to travel to, being able to provide for my family and my children. So my children all attend private school, and that's important to our family. So being able to pay for their schooling and the activities they want to do. And at the end of the day, it's really the material things are wonderful and I love them, but truly at the base of all that is a love for my family and wanting for them to have things that they want and need, not an endless amount, but for us to be comfortable in the way we like to live. But our health is also really important to us. So knowing that we can afford to take care of, you know, surprise health issues that might come up, and just feeling that we have a base of money set aside for emergencies, that makes me feel secure. Having money in the bank makes me feel secure and ultimately leads me to feel wealthy.
So tell our listeners how they can contact you.
So you can connect with me at my website, which is bizchicks.com. If you're a woman entrepreneur, you might enjoy listening to my podcast. You can find it in iTunes or any podcast app, or you can also listen from my website. And I spell chicks with an X. So it's bizchix.com. And I'm hosting a live event for women entrepreneurs in Southern California. There's more information on my webpage if you're could use some support and want to connect with a community of extremely supportive women entrepreneurs. I would love for people to check out that. And they can, again, do that at my website as well.
Fantastic. And I will be sure to link to your resources and information and the event on the podcast notes. Thank you so much, Natalie, for being on the show.
Thank you, Mary Beth. I love what you're doing. I'm a huge fan, and keep up the great work.
Thank you. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks for listening to today's episode of Work Your Wealth. If you liked what you heard, I'd love if you could head over to iTunes to leave a quick review and rating to share your thoughts on the show.